KL.
Good afternoon and welcome to Soundbites. We're excited to be here. I hope you're excited to have us. It is the 29th of December. I hope your holidays were magnificent and that your new year is everything you want it to be. And remember, stay home, leave the drinking to the amateurs on New Year's Eve. We're going to get to the calls in just a moment at the numbers you just heard, but let's start with the news, and we'll start with Dave.
One big thing that we want to welcome tell folks about is memory. If you were thinking about getting memory for your machine, you're going to want to do it within the next couple of weeks. We're already starting to see the memory prices really creep up. Anywhere from $5 to $10 than what you can get it for right now, even though it's really cheap anyways. I mean, you can get a 128 meg stick for like $20-$30, which, you know, is unheard of anyways. But it's going to start creeping back up, mainly because they let the supply run down. They anticipated the Christmas season, there was going to be a big rush on it. But because of the 911 incident, sales kind of slacked off. They weren't as big as folks you're hearing report as, even just on the holiday shopping, sales were off everywhere. So now they're letting that dry out. Now that that's dried out, they're starting to replenish it, and it's coming in at a higher price. So if you can, get out and get memory now while it still is low.
And Steve?
We're getting a lot of new OS X native software being shipped these days. Office 10 for OS X came out last month and is starting to sell very well as people are finally making the switch to running OS X full-time now that there are real applications available to take advantage of it. America Online shipped a version of their client software for OS X. They've had a public beta for a while, and they finally shipped the release version. And the latest one is Palm Desktop, so now you can sync your Palms into OS X with native Palm
and never see
software.
It again. Oh, different kind of sync. Sorry.
So we're seeing a lot more native OS X software. We're expecting Macworld in a couple of weeks to be a real big OS X software expo with announcements coming from Adobe and Macromedia, some of the big companies, about their flagship programs. We're still waiting for Photoshop and Quark Express are the two key programs available that need to be available for complete adoption of OS X. Photoshop, they've said quarter two, although they didn't quite say which year, quarter two. And then Quark is still the long holdout. They're working on version 5, which is a public beta now. After that, they'll do the OS X version.
Okay. You've all heard me, all of us, talk about viruses and stuff like that. I got a great email from Ted, and it says, I received an email virus warning that says the GM has just discovered a bad virus that will infect my car's computer. It says that there is a rock song that has a subliminal virus, and that will infect the computer by playing the song on my car radio. The note also says that this virus is not detectable by mechanics, but that I can tell if my car's computer has it by raising the hood and looking for a large black box with large wires attached to it. If this box says Die Hard instead of Delco, my car has the virus and I should cut the wires. What do you think? Luckily, Jim had an answer for Ted. I had that virus a week ago. To rid your auto of this virus, immediately take it to the nearest car wash. Must be one near you, and drive through backwards. By doing so, it removes the reverse polarity dirt and grime, which will in turn remove the virus. Remember to have the radio on full blast to get the maximum cleansing effect. I believe there is no extra charge for doing this process. Good luck.
And do it with the windows open.
Definitely the windows open in case the virus has gotten into the car itself.
It's got to get out. Otherwise, these cars are airtight.
Yeah, I thought that was a great email. Notice I didn't say I believed it, but I did think it was a great email. But it does point up you should do your antivirus stuff all the time. Now let's go to the phones now. Our first caller is Bruce. Wait a minute. It's not Bruce. It's Dave from Victor. Welcome, Dave. What's your question?
Hi, how you doing? I've got two quick questions. I'm looking to buy a computer now. I see all the Celerons. The prices have come down, but the Pentiums are still more expensive. How do you feel about the quality of a Celeron versus a Pentium 4? I guess it's depending on your use.
Yeah, what are you going to do with it?
Internet and email and more processors.
Then save the bucks in the Celeron. They're very good, reliable machines. Getting up into the Pentium 4 is a little overkill for you for what you want to do with it. If you were into a big gaming and all this other type of stuff, and or say a designer doing graphics and that type of stuff, I would recommend a higher-end machine. But just for internet and email and that type of stuff and the day-to-day stuff, Celeron is going to more than meet your needs.
Put the little extra money into more RAM. Start with 256. RAM.
You know what would be really slick if they don't offer it? Save the extra money and go with one of those nice flat panel monitors.
Yeah.
I mean, they take very little room, and they're phenomenal.
Okay, how do you feel about the... someone told me XP has to run on 256 or else 128, it's choppy.
256 is much better, but for that, you're probably going to want a Pentium processor rather than a Celeron, particularly for the graphics that it does just in its day-to-day usage.
Running XP?
Yeah. XP runs better seems to, at least on the machines I've run it on, seems to run better with a Pentium processor than with a Celeron.
Yeah, 512 RAM memory.
And a half a gig of RAM, but a quarter gig is enough. 256 meg is good.
Okay, one last question. Mac came out with a flat computer, the box, this flat box.
Yeah?
Has that been announced already? Has that been introduced?
There was the 20th anniversary Mac that came out in 97, which was basically a flat screen with a little extra space for the computer inside the flat screen. But that's the big rumor is going to come out in January, that they're going to be releasing a flat screen computer where the whole computer is built into a flat screen instead of the traditional CRT like the iMac is now.
Okay, thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you so much. We're going to take a quick break right now, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Nick Francesco, and you on Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM. You know, when your own announcer insults you...
But he knows us, and we've never met him!
We're back to the phones with Barry from Pittsburgh. Welcome, Barry. What's your question?
Hi, guys. Last week, I gave you a call because I hit that 137... gig ceiling on my XP.
Yeah.
Probably remember it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
By the way, kind of a PS on that. I went to Microsoft's website.
Yep.
And they have a way that you can work around that, but you have to go in and diddle on the registry.
Mm-hmm.
And I took a look in there and I said, okay, well.
Isn't that interesting?
137 is just fine.
Yeah, we'll leave the other 23 alone right now.
Yeah, right.
So, but now here's the problem, my question. I have two machines networked, and the reason I'm getting these big drives is because I want to back up from one to the other.
You want to download MP3s is what you want to do. But that's okay, go ahead.
Yeah. No, I wouldn't do that.
No, I knew that.
I don't have 35 gigs of that stuff.
Sure, no, of course not.
Right.
Only 11.
Right. So, anyway, I have my other machine that's networked to this XP machine is a 98B.
Yeah.
And I want to go get a bigger hard drive for it, and I'd like to do that today.
Mm-hmm.
What ceiling am I going to run into with a 98B?
Well, you better check with the, see if you can update the BIOS. Because in the BIOS is, you know, how much that's going to be able to see. Otherwise, you're going to have to use Mac Store or whether it's Western Digital. They come with Disk Mangler.
Yeah, and I'm aware of those. So
yeah, depending on your BIOS, there was an 8-gig limit. Then there was a 32-gig limit.
Well, I've already got a 60-gig on that machine, and it's working.
Oh, then go grab another 60-gigger.
You'll probably safe all the way to the 137 limit on the IDE spec.
Yeah,
exactly.
I thought that I would. I'd like to go get 100 because I see 100 on sale.
Yeah, you shouldn't have a problem with that. Like Steve says, you should be able to go up to the 137
gig.
He's
already
hitting
a 60 with no problem.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
Right. Okay, thanks
a lot,
guys.
But check the BIOS. That wouldn't hurt either.
Pardon?
Check and update the BIOS, too. I mean,
yeah, well,
it's
a relatively new machine. It's only a year old. I build all my machines.
Okay.
And it's just a year old, so that's probably why the BIOS is probably all right in it.
Yeah, you should be okay. It wouldn't hurt to check.
Yeah, okay.
Okie doke.
Thanks a lot for your help, guys.
Thanks so much. Our next caller is Ron from Rochester. Welcome, Ron. What's your question?
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Good.
Happy
how are
new
you?
Year. I've got two computers on the internet here. But for some strange reason, neither one of them will print out text on the email. One of them will print out a picture, but I cannot get either one to print out text.
What email program are you using?
Netscape. I have I downloaded 6.1.
Okay, and do you have anything unusual set in your email, like you're viewing white text on a black background?
Yeah, I have a black background.
Okay, and the text is white.
Well, there's no text. Yes, the text is white.
On the emails.
Yes.
That's why.
Yeah.
It's printing white. It's printing white.
White
text.
On white. That's like eating a marshmallow in a snowstorm.
Yeah, right. So what you're going to need to do is either, I believe in Netscape, and I'm afraid I don't have a version here in front of me to test this with. I apologize, but I believe in Netscape. There's an option in the print setup to reverse the printout.
Yeah.
Under printer?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Under print setup. And okay. If you do that, you should be all right.
There's also an option to print the backgrounds.
Then you get a full
black, wet, soppy paper with white text on it.
Right.
Well, the one I'm using is LocalNet, and it doesn't seem to be any option to change color or print setting at all.
In the printer setups, you want to go in there and check and
of see. Of Netscape itself, of the email. Yeah. If you open up file, you should see print setup as one of the choices.
Yeah, it doesn't matter who your ISP is. It's a setting inside
the printer.
Inside Netscape and into the printer. Yeah.
Okay, I'll give that a try.
Yeah,
okay.
Give it a shot and let us know.
Will do. Thank you very much.
There was also a bug in earlier versions of Netscape. I don't know if they fixed it in 6 yet. Some of the printers had a shrink to fit option, so mm-hmm. if you had a very wide web page, it would shrink it to fit on your paper.
Yep. Right.
Netscape was a little overzealous and would shrink it to a little tiny thumbnail in the upper corner, so you couldn't read it anyway.
Right. But at least it was shrunk, and that's really the nice thing. Our next caller is Marianne from Rochester. Welcome, Marianne. What's your question?
Yes, I saw internet advertisement
mm-hmm.
On the computer, and it was a tower, a Pentium 2, 240. Mm-hmm.
I have a Pentium 266,
mm-hmm.
and
yeah.
I want to know how do I find out how large a processor can I put in that?
What you're going to have to do is you should have gotten all the manuals with that system,
mm-hmm.
and look at the motherboard booklet. Within the motherboard booklet, you can then look up the model.
Not having the book and all that.
Well, then you're going to have to pull the case off,
uh-huh.
and you'll see usually written somewhere between the cards and all that, a particular manufacturer of that motherboard.
Uh-huh.
And in that motherboard, you can then see going on the web, what's the largest chip. Usually, again, this requires a flashing of the BIOS to support other chips. That's a slot 1, most likely. And you're going to be kind of limited there.
Some motherboards go to great deals to hide the model number, so it actually can be quite tricky to find exactly what model motherboard you have.
ASUS and a few of the others were good about silk screening it on the...
Right. But basically, you've got to look at the motherboard to see the model, and
right.
then go on the web to that manufacturer of motherboards.
What is IBM?
Yeah, and then from there, take a look at the model number and see what it can go up to.
Well, if it's an IBM brand computer,
it is.
Then you can go to IBM's website and go to the support page for that specific brand.
Yep. Right.
Oh.
You don't even have to open the case, just for that specific model number of your machine.
And it'll tell you whether there's a flash BIOS upgrade for that and what's the largest processor you'll be able to put into it after you do the flash.
I know you guys don't usually get into prices advising people on how much to pay for things, but $100 for a 350 megahertz processor, a case, zip drive, all that stuff. Is that a reasonable?
How much?
$100.
No, that's a good price.
That's a good price?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How much RAM does it have?
64.
That's a good price.
Yeah. For the case, you're getting a case, a zip drive, and everything else, so you should be good.
That's going to be less than it would cost to upgrade your existing machine.
Yeah, and you're going from a 266 up to a 350.
All right.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, thank you very much. Y'all doing a good job out there.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. Our next caller, as we do a good job, is Leo from Churchville. Welcome, Leo. What's your question?
Oh, hi, guys. I've got a couple CDs. Both are SCSI, and... in the last day, I've been having some difficulty getting them to write one to the other at full speed. Full speed for my system is 12x. And yesterday, the best I could do was 4x. I shut down applications, rebooted, tried everything, and nothing made a difference.
What has changed recently?
I don't know.
Well, have you installed any additional software?
Yes, we have. We've got a Palm Pilot software, the Klee that we installed.
you might want to make sure hot syncing is turned off, because it's always running in the background waiting for you to sync, so that's going to steal some processor cycles.
Okay, I took that off the taskbar. So I only run it, I can only run it manually from the start menu.
There's also an issue with certain types of media. The media has to be certified for higher speeds, and a lot of times the generic media doesn't work that well anyway.
Yes, I've got, was it 16X media or something like that? Yes.
Well, but it also depends on the brand. The less as Steve just said, the less expensive media, no matter what they're rated for, often don't write at a specific speed. For example, I have a drive at work, and if I use Sony media, I can write at 16X all day long, not a problem. Almost any other brand I use, 12X is the highest, and 8X is safer.
Yeah. Let me continue. This morning, having left my computer on all night, I was able to write, I think, 4 disks. Well, no problem at 12X. Then I went on the internet, checked the mail, came back, and I have the same problem again.
Well, what happens when you try to burn it faster and it doesn't work? Are you getting an
error? I get buffer underrun. I'm sorry.
There's something in the background stealing processor time.
Yeah, there's something stealing processor time. Now, here's an interesting point. What is your antivirus program?
It's McAfee's. I run it every day, and it's current.
Okay. When you go on to websites, do you go on to, well, you might not even know, but do you know if you go on to websites that have things like JavaScript and stuff like that? What I'm thinking is that when you go to certain websites, you're running something in the background that doesn't go away. I mean, even if you run games and things like that, sometimes you leave the website and it doesn't shut down that stuff in the background.
Okay.
The other thing you might want to do is run AdAware. If you go to our website, if you go to the WHAM 1180 WHAM website and go to the lower left corner, you'll see our three gorgeous faces.
Scary.
Well, my gorgeous face and Steve and Dave. And click on that button and go to the page, and then go to the web to the Soundbites page. When you get to the Soundbites page, go down to the lower right, and you'll see a listing of websites that we mentioned.
Yeah,
on the
but
show.
I'm the rose between two thorns, though.
Yeah. Or perhaps.
So you think, even though I'm not online here, that I might have something running in the background?
Most likely.
Exactly. And if you go to our website, go down to the lower right, you'll see a link that says, "I heard about a website on your show."
Yes.
Click on that, and the first choice. There are two sets of websites. One sorted by date, so you can see today's fast.
I'm aware of that.
And then one sorted alphabetically. And the top one is AdAware. That will remove spyware from your system. It is possible that you are running spyware, and even if you're not online, it's collecting data and therefore taking up cycles.
Okay. Is there any way in the system monitor, for instance, that I can tell if my resources are being gobbled up?
Well, you can certainly take a look at the system monitor and see what your CPU is running at, but that won't tell you what it is.
You can look in the task manager and see if there's any unknown tasks running, all of them are listed.
Almost
there.
All the tasks are unknown
in the startup menu, too, is where you might have other TSRs, terminate and stay resident, right, that are loading up and running in the background.
And all that stuff running down in the taskbar, if you've got an instant messenger program.
No, the only thing I have is antivirus and the tasks.
The antivirus could possibly be causing it. If you have it set to paranoid mode, it looks at every single file as it's open and then again as it's written.
And if it's doing that to the CD.
Right.
Yep.
Exactly. It may be doing that. You might want to just try turning off the, as long as you're disconnected from the internet, turn off the antivirus while you're writing, see if that solves it.
Okay.
Okey-doke?
Yep, thank you.
Okay. Well, that was just a plethora.
Really?
Phenomenal ideas, none of which I'm sure will work. But we're going to take a quick break now because our plethoras are all worn out. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Oops. God, that was professional.
I liked it, really.
Use the phone, Luke, and call us.
But the old-fashioned way, carrier pigeon.
Or the real old-fashioned way, smoke signals and drums.
Pony Express.
Was invented?
18-something.
1600-something. Yep.
That's right. That's exactly right. We're going to talk to Brian from Fairport next. Welcome, Brian. What's your question?
Well, I actually called you last week. I had the...
Wow, you've been on hold forever.
Yeah.
How was your Christmas?
It was good. No, you teased me about working on my friend's computer, but it really is.
Yeah.
Okay, I had the HP... with ME, and we put 98 SEN, and I was having trouble finding the sound drivers. But I did find them. I had it all running here. The video was fine. The sound was fine. She takes it home. I go with her, and it comes up. The video is gone. It says there's a problem with the display. You try to change it. You go to 16 high color, and it won't go to 600 by 800, and it tells you to restart, and the video won't reinstall. Is it possible that somehow our monitor's making a difference?
No, 10 to 1 odds, what you're going to have to do is, one, uninstall the video card again.
Okay.
Go back to boot it in safe mode and change it back to just a standard graphics video card.
Right.
All right, reboot up in normal mode. Put the CD in for the video card,
mm-hmm.
and reinstall it that way.
But it is possible that if her monitor is an older fixed-focused monitor or fixed-resolution monitor,
yeah.
it may not work in 8x6. It might have to work in 640x480.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or it might only do 256 colors, and you try to push it to even 1600 colors, and it just tweaks it out and says, sorry, I ain't doing this.
Well, the machine's not that old. It's within a year. It's a
no, we're not talking about the machine. We're talking about the monitor.
Right.
The monitor might not have the capabilities of going beyond 250.
Even if it's a new monitor, if it's an inexpensive monitor,
right.
it may be limited to particularly if it's a 15-inch monitor, it may be limited to the size it'll go.
Okay.
Now, what was the error message again?
It says as soon as you restart it, it says your display settings have a problem, and it takes you right to display settings.
Yeah,
and you can change the color.
Triangular box.
Yeah, and
only
gives
you one option. Okay.
Yeah. And I ran the program I got off online, and it worked here with my Envision monitor. And then I say as soon as she hooked it up to hers.
Yeah, that's what it is.
It could be the frequency seeking.
Yeah, different frequencies.
What bothered me most, I just tell you, is when I tried to reinstall it, it usually puts a little monitor down by your taskbar, and it would not fully install.
Well, you know what?
Well, that can be an option, too, that can be turned off as well. But you also might need a driver for that monitor to tell Windows the capabilities of the monitor.
Okay.
Not all monitors are plug-and-play or have drivers built into Windows.
Or you can schlep your monitor on down to her house and just replug it in there and see if it works,
and then try to get it home again.
And then,
Let me ask you one more thing. In the device manager, on my computer, it lists the Envision. On hers, it doesn't even say HP. It just says default monitor. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yes,
well, because
that
doesn't
would tell
know.
You.
Yeah, it needs a driver for the monitor.
Okay, gotcha. All right.
And then the trick is syncing the monitor driver with the video driver so they both talk the same thing.
Yeah, and that might be tweaking it out because it can't go to the frequency that it needs for
I'd
that.
Like to know about a nice site for drivers. It's called Dr. Drivers.
Yep.
DR or the full doctor?
DOC.
DRDRIVER?
Yep.
Dr.
Drivers, plural. Yep.
Okay,
okay,
we'll put that up
on our
website.
Okay,
thanks,
guys.
Okay, our next caller is Ed from Webster. Welcome back, Ed. Welcome, Ed. What's your question?
Well, I went out and bought Norton 2002,
mm-hmm.
and went to install. And when I hit the uninstall, it came back and said it didn't like me, and there was a corrupted file. So I contacted the Norton website, and they sent me a procedure to uninstall it manually.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the day, when I started it up, I had a CD-ROM failure. It says D/ is not accessible. This folder was moved or removed. And one additional problem was that I don't know, it's coincidental, but I haven't been able to connect to the Internet.
Well, that's two separate problems.
Okay.
What it sounds like, the first one may well be that you had the CD, you didn't have the CD in when you went to uninstall, and it may want that.
Or you might have a virus already on the
machine, because now all of a sudden it's not finding that folder, and it's not letting
it out.
It could also be that you had that window open when you rebooted the machine, or when you shut the machine down. And then with the CD out, it's trying to remember that you had that window open. Or Norton put like a registration program in your startup folder to look at the CD to run some other program the next time you boot.
Okay, what I did was I went to DOS and to see if I could test the CD-ROM, and I typed in D directory.
And you won't find it.
Yeah, it said there's no label.
Right.
Because you probably don't have a DOS CD driver loaded.
Right, the CD driver only works in... So if you put a disk in the CD and double-click on the D in your My Programs, it doesn't open?
That's right. It's, the message is, D is not, no matter what I put in there, D is not accessible. This folder was moved to
Question for you, though. Before, did you have an antivirus software on your machine before you installed Norton?
Yes, and in fact, I just had a virus and I cleaned it.
Uh-huh.
With what?
I ran the virus checker before I started.
Which one was it?
It was Norton 5.0.
And you had the latest DAT file?
No.
That didn't do you any good.
Well,
it
was updated to the 19th of December.
Okay. That is the latest DAT file.
Yeah.
Did you uninstall 5 before you tried to put in 2002?
Well, that's what I tried to do.
And see, 5 won't uninstall?
It wouldn't uninstall. It says that there's a file in there, nav95.isu.
That's corrupted.
Yep.
And then they gave me this manual procedure where you had to change the register, the hard drive, and the autoexec bat.
Mm-hmm.
And when I did all that, then I come back and they had just this problem.
You might have missed something in the registry, so that what Norton used to be running is now looking for a different directory. Was it deleting a line in the registry or changing a line?
Oh, there's several places it had you take out all references to
right.
Norton. It had you take out the Norton uninstall, and there's about six steps in there where you do deletions.
Is it all, and in what you did in the autoexec and in the registry, was there any reference to the D drive in any of that?
No, it's a very simple change in the autoexec bat. You just put in a semicolon in front of the ampersand to eliminate.
Right.
The execution of...
All right, listen, Ed, hold on. Don't hang up. We're going to go to a fairly long break, but if you'll stay on the line, we'll come back and talk to you again after the break, okay? Okay.
All right.
We'll be back in just a couple... No, we'll be back in quite a while. We're gonna go to news and stuff like that, but we'll be back shortly.
See what's happening in the real world.
We're exactly right, with a whole lot more sound bites on 1180 WHAM. It's true. I am Nick Francesco.
And I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And we have Ed from Webster on the line.
Right.
Ed, are you still there?
Yeah, right.
What's your next question?
Well, what I was wondering is whether I could lay Windows 98 over the existing version.
Yes, you can.
Using the boot disk.
That might be your best bet at this point.
No, what's even easier, Ed, is to check and see under Windows, see if there's a folder called Options. Under Options, there's usually a folder called Cabs. If not...
How do you spell it?
Go into Windows Explorer and click on the plus sign next to Windows.
Cabs would be C-A-B-S, like
yeah,
taxis.
Okay.
But first then you got to go down and see if there's an Options folder.
Uh-huh.
And then below that is a cab, C-A-B-S.
Yeah.
See if all the files are in there. If they are, then all you have to do is reboot into DOS mode, go into that folder, doing a CD / Windows / Options / cabs, and hit enter.
Mm-hmm.
Then just type in setup, all one word, S-E-T-U-P.
Okay.
Hit enter, and away it's going to go. It's going to reinstall Windows over Windows.
Oh, great.
Okey-doke.
All your icons and everything else will remain the same.
Well, but how am I going to, right now, I don't have a disk, CD-ROM drive to do that.
The point is, if that cabs folder is there, everything from the CD is in that folder.
Okay.
It's there, you win.
Okay.
Okey-doke.
If it's not there, then you have to go back to your boot disk.
Right.
Yep.
Okey-doke, thanks. Our next caller is Jim from Greece. Welcome, Jim. What's your question?
How are you doing today?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing good, thanks. I got a question about my laptop. When I tried to boot it up, this is probably a couple weeks ago now, it just sits there in the, gives the Windows emblem first when it's booting up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It sits there, and it doesn't download to the desktop.
Right.
And it's stuck.
What have you added recently?
The only thing that was added was Microsoft Works 6.1.
What was taken away?
There's probably an error message behind that Windows logo on the DOS screen.
When the system starts to boot, hit the escape key a few times. Usually that will make that window, which is just a graphic,
right,
go away, and you'll be able to see the boot messages as it boots up.
Right.
You can also use the F8 key.
F8?
Right, and that will bring up a little menu, and one of the options is step-by-step, where it will walk through your boot files step-by-step.
And you reply to each one of them.
Right, you can see each one of them run, and then you can see if any error messages come up for any of the commands.
Right. I mean, I was wondering if it was the hard drive or something that...
Well, it could be, but you won't know that until you go through these steps.
Most likely, it's a program that's hanging.
Right.
And
this will tell you...
the error.
Right. And then the way you get past it is reboot again step by step, and this time say no to the one that hung, and move on from there, and then you'll be back into Windows, and you can deal with removing that program.
Okay.
Okie doke.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Our next caller at 222-1180 in the 585 area code. If you're outside the 585 area code, it's 800-295-1180. And if you're a Verizon wireless customer, *1180 on your cell phone. Our next caller is Art from Brighton. Welcome, Art. What's your question?
Hi, guys.
I love talking to you, Art. How are you?
Good. Congratulations, I think, on your move.
Thank you so much.
It gives you a lot longer time to be helpful.
That's right.
Yep.
I got out an email that said a virus, S-U-L-F.
No. Sorry. I have to cut you out. It's sulfnbk.exe. That is a normal Windows file.
Okay.
This is a semi-hoax.
Okay.
If you get an email saying sulfnbk.exe should be removed from your system, do not remove it. Now, the reason I call it a semi-hoax is this. Sulfnbk is a standard Windows file. It's the file that fakes long file names in DOS-based versions of Windows. In DOS, of course, you can only have 8.3, 8 characters, a period, and 3 characters. In Windows, you can have long file names, but how do you translate those to the 8.3 of DOS? Well, that's what sulfnbk.exe does. It translates long file names to short file names and back again. So you will always have that file there. Now, because it's an .exe file, it could, of course, become infected with a virus. But removing the file doesn't remove the virus if you have one. Uninfecting it removes the virus, so you have to be running an antivirus program. Never just delete a file from the DOS, from DOS. That never gets rid of the virus. You need to be running an up-to-date antivirus program, and the simple fact that Sulfnbk exists on your machine means nothing.
Okay, now, if you do remove it, what do you have to do to get it back?
You'd have to extract it out of the cab files.
Yeah, unfortunately.
If you can get to them.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you'll be able to get to them through DOS.
You'll have to know how to translate the long file.
The safest way is to just go ahead and run your antivirus and let it clean it out of it.
Right. If you have removed it, oh, my golly. Write this down, Steve. I'm going to have to put up a link. There are a couple of places on the net that tell you how to replace that file if you've accidentally removed it, but it's a long and involved procedure, and it's better to print it out from the screen, from the website, and follow it step by step. So I will make that available on the Soundbites webpage after the show.
Good idea. Now, if a virus is good enough to or well done enough to send itself to everybody on your address list, how do you send a file to everybody on your address list?
You really can't send it to everybody. That's a misunderstanding of the way the viruses work. They don't send it to everybody in one email. They send it to everybody one at a time.
So if you have 500 people in your address book, there'll be 500 messages in your outbox.
Right.
And they just do, one at a time each time you're connected.
Right. That's why that other thing that people keep talking about by putting a bogus email at the beginning of your list, !!!0000, doesn't work.
If you routinely want to send the same message to a lot of people, most email programs have a group function where you can put several different addresses into a group,
and then you email
the group, and then it takes care. You have to do it once, but then the group function takes care of sending the same message to 20 people.
Right. So I have one that called Soundbites Crew with those two in, and I've got another called Friends, that sort of thing. But you can't. There is no function in most email programs that just says everybody in my address book.
You have to go through and list them all.
Exactly.
Because that's usually considered a non-polite thing to do.
Exactly.
Send that much mail out at once.
Well, yeah, because I've got about 10 folks that I constantly keep track of the McAfee DAT files, and I'll download it, and then because I know these clients just won't remember, so all I have to do is do up an email and say, here's the latest DAT file, update your system, and I email it out to all 10 of them every week.
Right.
Now, what would reinstalling Windows itself restore that file?
Yeah, but that is kind of the, you know,
the hard way.
The hard way, and the 20-pound hammer for a fly kind of method.
I see, because unfortunately I did this.
Yeah, well, your system is not dead. You're just having trouble translating from long to short file names.
Okay.
So I will put that up at some point this afternoon. God knows I've got plenty of things to do today, but I will put that up sometime this afternoon. So later on this evening, you'll be able to find it on our website. Again, it'll be under the links. If you go down to the lower right corner, the FAQ box says, I heard a website on your show, and I'll link it there.
Very good.
Okay,
thanks, guys.
Well,
you're a big help.
We should put it in the FAQ rather than a link.
Well, you're right. It should be a FAQ. You're right. Well, it is the FAQ part, but I'll make it an FAQ. Our next caller is Steve from Irondequoit. Welcome, Steve. What's your question?
Hi, guys, and Happy New Year.
Thanks. Same to you.
I've got a customer list on an old software, 5 or 6 years old, called MyData.
Sure.
And it's old and cranky and small and slow, and I want to go to something a little newer.
Sure.
How do I get my old files from the old one to the new one?
10-to-1 odds, if the program has the capabilities, you're going to have to export it. And export it as either a comma delimited or a space delimited or tab delimited file.
I'm sorry, say that again?
A tab delimited file or a comma delimited file.
You need to match that with whatever program you're moving it into to see what formats it can read. And the comma separated and tab separated are two very common database interchange formats.
Right, so essentially what you do is you get every record is separated by a carriage return, and the fields inside are separated by tabs or commas. And what you have to do is know what your new one will take and then just make the old one export it that way.
Okay.
It can get tricky.
But it should be doable. You should have an export function in MyData that'll send it to, for example, a CSV file, which is comma-separated values. That's the comma-delimited version.
Okay.
If you're unlucky and the program doesn't have an export function, then you're probably going to have to muck about inside the raw data file with some sort of a big text editor and hope to be able to export.
The other thing you can do is print it to a file. If you have the ability to print to files, you can print it to a file, and then you have it as a giant text file, and then you can start playing around with it.
Oh, okay.
Okie doke.
All right, thanks.
Thank you so much. We're going to take another quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. We have to make this so they understand it? Oh, man, who knew?
All right, I didn't think we had to do that.
I hate that. Before we go back to the phones, let's take a look at our polls. Last week's poll, I want to thank Ted Larson, who sent in a suggestion. If you have a suggestion, please send it to pollideas@soundbites.org, and I would be happy to use them. Last week's poll was, should spam be illegal? Two simple choices, yes and no. 200 of you answered, thank you so much. And yes won by an astounding margin. 74% of you thought spam should be illegal. 26% of you, who will never be allowed to vote against, said no. And that was last week's poll. Thanks to all 200 of you. This week's poll is a little different. My friend Sam Bellotto Jr. Had a question about games on the computer. What games do you like to play? And the choices are arcade-style games, casino and card games, word games, or games are for weenies. Now, I hate to say this, Sam. Sam runs a website. Sam creates a product called Crossdown at crossdown.com, and it's a great program. It's crosswords. It's my favorite, which are anacrostics or enigma crosses, as he calls them. And it's my favorite kind of game. And, in fact, if you go to my website, asknick.com, you can even play a few enigma crosses, thanks to Sam. But his question was, you know, what games you like to play. And unfortunately, word games so far is at the bottom of the list. But no matter what kind of games you like to play, we'd love to have you vote in the poll at soundbites.org. So log on and go for it. And while you're there, sign up for the forums. Let us know what city and state you're from. And we'd be delighted to have you join. We're going to go back to the phones now, and our next caller is Jorge. Welcome. What's your question?
Hey, good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Afternoon, actually. It's afternoon now, isn't it?
Yeah, whatever works for you works for me.
Well, I slipped in late. Hey, I have a problem. I have a Dell Inspiron and a laptop, and a couple of months ago, it started to hang up when I shut down.
Yeah.
Where I wound up having to actually manually just shut it down.
Yep.
Now it does it all the time.
98 second edition?
Yeah.
Have you done the shutdown patch?
No.
Microsoft, it's a well-known problem within Windows 98 that it didn't always shut down correctly, so they came out with a patch. And if you go up to the Microsoft website, you can see there is a shutdown patch for it.
And it should find it if you do the Windows update from the start menu.
Yep.
What they actually did is they tried to write a program to make Windows shut down faster, and in actuality, it doesn't shut down at all.
Yeah.
So basically, the patch is to turn off the shutdown faster.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
You know, it's
but usually what happens is there's some program running that won't let go, and so Windows can't completely shut down.
Okay.
So the first thing to check is the shutdown patch. If that doesn't work, then you got to start looking at your task manager and seeing what programs you're running and trying to figure out what all the cryptic messages mean.
But start with the shutdown patch because that's most likely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. I wound up actually taking everything off the start menu.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
it could be any one of a million things, Jorge. It could easily be if you're online, it could be the network connection not shutting down. It could be anything, and this shutdown patch will fix most of that.
Okay, I really appreciate it. You guys do a great service to us that aren't very computer literate.
Well, thank you so much.
We appreciate
that. We hope to be here for you for another 12 years at least.
Okay, bye. Got
Thanks.
Thanks.
Our next caller is Diane from Greece. Welcome, Diane. What's your question?
Well, I just got for Christmas an iBot webcam.
How cool is that?
It's cool. However, I'm looking for an application that can be used both on the Mac and PC. I used iVisit, but the picture quality was pretty bad. And I can't seem to get the headset going. This is new to me, but it's fun. And we look pretty awful, but that's okay. The kids were showing me their Christmas presents. Right over the computer.
Mm-hmm.
It's great.
What interface does the camera have? How does it connect
to
the computer?
I have a FireWire. I have a DSL connection. My son is using a 56K modem and a new PC, but I don't know.
Yeah, the FireWire camera should give you a pretty good video out the other end.
The problem will be the other end with the 56K.
56K modem, possibly or probably a USB camera, or maybe even a serial camera. There are slower interfaces, so the video is choppier.
Okay.
But iVisit is the big software that runs on both sides. Another one is called CUCME.
Okay, I looked on the internet and I couldn't find it.
Well, it's gone through several incarnations and was created on the Mac at Columbia University.
Okay.
It's a little hard to find the original free versions because it's gone commercial and been updated a few times. Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the places to find it is at a website called Version Tracker.
Oh, yeah, okay.
That lists pretty much any Mac, Windows, PC, Palm software you can find and lets you search through their database.
Okay.
And it's letter C, letter U, S-E-E-M-E.
Yeah, no, I know what it is, but I just couldn't find the...
But
free version for the Mac.
Mm-hmm. Right, but it sounds, Dan, like the problem is actually at the other end. It's the 56K modem that makes everything choppy.
And even the video you're sending would be good, but receiving it on a 56K modem would be choppy.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. Now, on my end, I was wondering if I could increase the bandwidth, and I don't know what... point to go to it. Was it 120 kilobits per second?
But again, that won't help, Diane. It's not at your end that the problem is.
Okay.
Yeah, at the other end. You've got probably sufficient.
If your kids had either DSL or a cable modem, then you would not have this problem.
Okay.
The problem is their modem.
Okay.
Sorry.
Now, the other thing is the microphone, I really don't know anything about it. I got a headset with it. And it says, If your Microsoft can use an electric sensor type microphone, which I don't know.
What model Mac do you have?
A G4 450.
No microphone port. The electric mics are what's traditionally known as a microphone, a little long, skinny connector.
Okay.
All the newer Macs have a USB microphone, USB connections for microphones. The iMacs still have a mic port.
What are the little plugs on the side where the microphone goes in?
That's not microphone. That's a speaker.
Oh.
One is an analog speaker out, one is a digital speaker out.
Oh, okay. Because I've got an older monitor. I've got a 5-year-old monitor.
And the monitor doesn't matter. It's the computer.
Doesn't matter.
Yep.
Okay. Okay, well, I'll try this to
you.
Yeah,
so you need a USB microphone.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Actually, I think I'd rather do the show in a steam room.
Yeah, same here, a chat room.
Or a lunch room.
That's
but we're here,
for the
pizza
equipment.
And wings.
Yeah. But here we are at in a soundproof booth, which is, and we are, in fact, fully clothed. So we're doing the show now, and we're talking to Denise from Greece.
Hi, how you doing?
Peachy, how are you?
Okay. I have a Flash 5 action script question.
Sure.
I've created a couple of movies, and I want to control the browser window that they open into. And so I'm wondering how... do I write the action script that controls the browser window size?
You don't need to control that from Flash itself. You can control that from regular HTML. What you do is when you go to open, you have like some sort of button that takes you to the Flash page.
Right.
Right.
Well, actually, button, of course, is in Flash. I click on that. I say on release, go to that URL, you know.
Right. And that URL could have, as part of the beginning bits, you're going to have you'll want some standard HTML code. And one thing you can do is select a window position and a window size.
Right. I know how to do that in Dreamweaver, because that sets it all up for you and HTML for you. But in Flash, you have operations I can't think of the name of it now.
Right, but in Flash, one of the things you can do is set up HTML bits, right?
Okay.
And what you want to do is create the window size you want in Dreamweaver and take a look at the code. You'll see window position equals and window size and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Copy that out and put it in the HTML section of the Flash 5 code.
The HTML section.
You get when you create a Flash 5 page,
right.
One of the things that you can send is certain HTML headers. I don't remember.
Well, they have in the action scripts section, they have... like go to and play function that are already delineated for certain, for whatever things you might want to do.
Right.
Date to string, date dot set, you know, that sort of thing.
Right.
So, but they do have something that is underscore height equals whatever you want to put in, underscore width equals whatever your size is. But when I put that in and... I called for the URL, you know, when I did test movie.
Right.
It didn't constrain the size of the browser window. It's still, the browser window was still so much larger than the actual movie that I had created.
Were you using pixels or inches as your dimensions?
Pixels.
That should have worked.
Yeah, that should have worked.
Yeah, it should have. It, you know, I mean, I have a width of... 200 and a height of 300 pixels, and when I put that in, you know, in the frame, I mean, I clicked on the frame and then I went to the actions menu and typed it in with the brackets and all the whole nine yards, It still didn't constrain it.
Right. Well, did you put that in constraint?
No. There isn't a heading for constraint.
Well, but there are functions.
Yeah, there's functions, and then there's quite a long list of, but there's frame actions, which is where I'm trying to put it, and then there's under properties, there's a list of things that I can click on. So there's height, frames, load, focus.
Right, but that's in the flash itself, not in
right.
the window. What you want is the window properties.
Right. So how do I get to the window properties then?
Well, that's a good question. Off the top of my head, I don't remember where. I don't do a lot of flash. But I do know that there is a place where you can type in window or constraint arrow something and window arrow something.
Mm.
Tell you what I'll do. Steve is writing this down.
Mm-hmm.
We will find a site that gives you that answer and put it online.
Oh, great.
Have you dug around Macromedia's site any? Because they've got some very good developer information there.
Yeah, and when I go to Micromedia and enter into the Flash discussion groups and all that, they download something like 1,500 questions, and it takes you months to just find the one that you're looking for. Well, you find a whole lot of other neat stuff, too, in a way, but...
Well, right, but
yeah.
It is in there, and
just gotta keep looking.
Yeah.
Yeah, I will look, and I will find something for you. But off the top of my head, I can't answer that question instantly because I haven't done it in a long time, and I don't remember where it is. But there's a window constraint thing, and I just don't remember where it is. But I'll find it.
Okay, and you're gonna post it on a website.
I will.
Which is
soundbites.org.
Okay, thanks.
Okie doke. We're gonna have to start a, like I do on Ask Nick, I'm gonna have to start a questions I couldn't answer on the air section for this. Our next caller is Jackie from Ontario. Welcome, Jackie. What's your question?
Hello. I have actually three different questions. At work we have three computers that are networked peer-to-peer. They're IBM clones, and they're running Windows 98. And we have two HP printers
mm-hmm.
hooked up. One is a laser jet and one is an inkjet. Periodically, for no reason that I can think of, occasionally anyway, we run into problems where when you click to the printer, you get the, you know, you have to do it manually. And when I check, I find that work offline is clicked. And why does that happen?
Because if you happen to boot up your machine and that's the default printer for that, say, that second PC.
Yeah.
Say PC 1 has the HP hooked up to it.
Right.
And computer 2 is turned on first. And it looks like, you know, it's looking to computer 1 for the default printer.
Mm-hmm.
And computer 1 isn't turned on. Oh, well, it's going to sit there and say, I guess I have to work offline for right now.
Or if computer 1 gets rebooted while you're online.
Oh.
Yep.
So that's really the only reason.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And that's typically why with printers you want to have a print server that's always left on and never turned off.
Uh-huh.
It's easiest to share it from a workstation,
but
it's best
it becomes
to have a
pain in the patoot. What's your next question?
Okay. Well, that explains it anyway, and I like to know why things are happening.
Yep.
Occasionally, when we're using our Excel programs, we get a window and a sound like wind, and it says, can't display the full window, you know, there's not enough, memory, something.
Mm-hmm.
And I... totally am flummoxed by this because the hard drive is hardly full.
Well,
that's
it's
memory,
not the
that's
hard
storage.
Drive. Right.
Memory is the RAM that's in the computer.
Mm-hmm.
How much RAM does it have?
And if you've got a bunch of stuff open, or you're running Windows 98 on all these machines?
Yes.
Windows 98 has a problem called memory leak. As you open and close Windows, memory is used. when you go to close them, that memory is supposed to be given back so it can be used by something else.
Yeah.
It's sometimes it's not given back, so that's called memory leak. And what happens is you end up with holes in memory. So you may have 128 meg, and after opening and closing Windows for a day, you have maybe 40 meg.
Especially if you're using big programs like the Office Suite.
And right. And yes. Especially the size of the spreadsheet.
Right. Okay, so how do we overcome that?
How much memory reboot?
And how much memory's in the machine?
Oh, I'm not there, so I can't really.
So you got to check, because some folks go ahead and upgrade these machines and still leave them at 32 meg, which is definitely not enough memory.
Right. 6,428 is better, but the only way you're going to solve this problem, no matter how much memory you have...
We have 32 or 64, I'm not sure which.
You want more memory. Get your folks to buy you more memory. That will postpone the problem, not solve it.
Mm-hmm.
You solve it by not running Windows 98, by running something like NT2000 mm-hmm. or XP. But what you'll
need... we're not going to change that.
But what you'll need to do is simply reboot your system. That clears out memory.
You can also help minimize the problem by not closing Windows. If you're gonna be in Excel, leave Excel open. Don't close Excel to open Word. Leave Excel open. Leave Word open.
Well, but if you've only got 32 meg of RAM, you can't.
Then yeah, right. That's gonna be
right.
A problem.
So you
side.
Need to upgrade your memory and then leave the two big programs you run all day open all the time.
Huh.
There you go.
Okay. Now my third and final question.
Okay. We usually try to limit people, but go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, I did say I had to.
Yeah.
Yep.
I just heard an ad for dial-up Roadrunner. Do you know anything about that? Because I can't get anything out here. I can't get DSL.
No, the dial-up is for when you have real Roadrunner on cable. The dial-up means you can get your mail when you're not at home.
Oh.
So, for example, if you go off on the road or whatever.
Yeah, traveling.
If you're out of range of DSL or cable, the only high-speed alternative is satellite, which is very expensive.
Very expensive.
No.
Sorry.
Well, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. We're going to take another quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, Nick Francesco. Soundbites, 1180 WHAM. We're talking next to Roger from Rochester. Welcome, Roger. What's your question?
Good afternoon. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Can you hear us? Oh, okay. All right. I'm kind of new at a lot of this, and I'm still trying to basically learn. But I was just wondering if there's a way you can... print an entire help section instead of having to click here and click there, and you go through about 100 sheets of half sheet papers just to learn about one subject. Isn't there a way you can, like, if I want to know a total database, like for instance Microsoft Works, mm-hmm. is there a way that I can just print everything that's in the help
A lot depends on the help program they're using. Sometimes
well,
you can print
what
the entire
I have,
topic.
What I have is Works 97 that came with the computer. Microsoft Works 97.
Check in the menu of the help program. Sometimes there's a print page. And additionally, there might be a print entire topic.
That's the way most of them do it.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I bought a Microsoft Word 2000 from CompUSA, but even that, I had to buy a special book separately. But they did have a tutorial that they sold that cost us another about $75 or something like that, I forgot.
Mm-hmm.
But it was good. It
yeah,
was
right.
A real hands-on. Now, years back, I guess, most all programs used to have a special section for hands-on tutorials.
But you know what? 99% of those books were great. If you wanted to put them on the shelf and impress the hell out of your friends, if you really wanted to find out what was going on in a program, which I have recommended for years, is to go out and buy a third-party book, because they actually take the time to learn the ins and outs of the program, teaching you different tricks and tips that, you know, like the Dummy series. They're fantastic. or visually doing, say, windows or visually doing works. Those programs actually get into doing the program and getting something out of it, whereas the manuals are usually written by the folks that actually wrote the code, and they don't have a clue.
And yeah, but if you do want to print out, if you do want to print out the whole thing, usually most programs do have a button that says print out all subtopics in the print menu. So you go to File, Print, and you'll find a button that says print out all subtopics.
Okay. I didn't see it, but maybe I just wasn't
looking. Most of them have that.
Okay.
Sometimes it might be in the advanced.
The thing of it is that now I wanted a book. I thought CompUSA would sell at least a book put out by Microsoft for Microsoft Works.
No.
They don't even carry it.
Right.
There are a lot
how
of places.
They not carry it?
Well, it's not something they have a call for. There are a lot of places in town that do sell books, and you can buy most of these things online as well from MicrosoftPress.com.
Which is actually a frustration, because if they wrote their manuals better, then you wouldn't need to buy their books.
They don't
want to
write the manuals because you don't
buy the
manual. You want to buy. They want you to buy the books. But that's it. We're going to go on to our next call. Phil from Lima. Welcome, Phil. What's your question?
Hi, guys. I have a friend of mine that just migrated from web TV to a PC.
Mm-hmm. Ooh.
And she doesn't want to retype her whole address book. Is there a way to...
In Internet Explorer?
I haven't used
the web TV. The problem is web TV is not a real computer.
Correct.
And I don't know where... They don't have any way to send files. They don't... Her machine is not one of the ones with a floppy disk.
Right.
I don't know that there's any way around it. You cannot get the files out of Web TV to any place else.
Well, what I was thinking is if she can export it out to a file and then email it to herself to her other computer.
Right.
Yeah, she might be able to attach it to a document if she's got the not the first version of Web TV, because you couldn't do attachments in that version. But if she has a version that'll let her do attachments, she might be able to attach her address book, which should be a .pst file.
You can also try doing a copy and paste. Open your address book and copy the address out, paste it into an email message. You don't have to retype it, but it's annoying copying and pasting.
Yeah, it's crazy how many she has. Yeah.
But there's no easy way, because Web TV was not designed to interface to anything else ever.
Right. What I was wondering is if you could, from the PC, log on to the web TV.
No,
wouldn't that be nice?
No.
Grab it in Notepad or something.
She's got to see if she can export it out.
Does she have a printer port on her web TV?
No.
Yeah, so
no, see,
the later
web
model
TV was
designed.
Right. Sorry.
Right.
I wish I had a better answer for you. She might, well, yeah, there's nothing other than.
It's the long holiday weekend. Tell her address. You know.
Yeah.
Other than mailing it to her new address, there's nothing I can think of that would do it.
All right.
Sorry.
Thanks a lot.
Our next caller is Bob from Walworth. Welcome, Bob. What's your question?
Yes, I have a recurring problem. When I turn my computer on, I get a message that says I have a keyboard error or no keyboard present.
Press F1 to continue.
This is periodic. It doesn't happen every time, but then it may go on for 4, 5, 6 weeks and not recur again, then suddenly it happens again.
Do you have, do you move the keyboard often or?
No, not at all.
You might want to do is check to see that the connector is in tight.
Mm-hmm. I've done
but
that.
But one thing, though, you got to watch out, because this can be it's not expensive, but it is as far as what it is a pico fuse. It's a little fuse that's not longer than, say, an eighth of an inch and wider than a sixteenth of an inch. Mm-hmm. But if it could be that fuse is getting ready to go. And when it does, what you have to do is literally take out the whole motherboard. Everything's got to come out of it. You've got to take out the motherboard, flip it over, unsolder the two ends, pull out that pico fuse and put it in a new one.
The PS2 ports that keyboard and mice plug into are powered ports, and you should never plug or unplug them
while they're powered up.
And usually when this fuse blows, you have to replace the motherboard, unless you've got a really, really steady hand to solder a new fuse on.
Yeah, but first I would suggest
we do it all the time.
Turn the machine off and make sure the thing is plugged in. If you're lucky, it was loose.
Is that fuse labeled at all on the motherboard?
Not that I remember.
What, the Pico fuse?
Mm-hmm.
No, you'll just see it. It's just a little tiny, can be greenish or
right near
olive.
the keyboard.
And if you've plugged and unplugged your keyboard a lot over the years, then
yeah,
the actual
can weaken it.
You can weaken the solder joints on the motherboard itself.
Mm. Okay.
If you're lucky, the problem is that it's unplugged. If you're a little less lucky, it's a bad keyboard. If you're really unlucky, it's the solder on the connection. And if you're really, really unlucky, it's the Pico fuse.
Okay. Great. Thanks for your help.
Okay. Okie doke. Our next caller is, who is it? Ed from Rochester. Welcome, Ed. What's your question?
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Afternoon.
Well, my question is, I've got a network at home, and my son's got a new computer, so I got his old computer, which was on another network.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to put his computer in my network, and it doesn't work. It doesn't see the network.
In your network identity properties, in the network control panel,
Okay. The
middle tab is identity. You need to make sure the work group name on the new computer is the same as the work group on all the other ones.
It is.
And you got to set up sharing.
I've done sharing.
And do you have NetBUI on there?
NetBUI?
You have to have NetBUI on both machines.
Well, you have to make sure that all the machines are using the same protocol, either NetBUI or TCP or both.
Okay.
And there's also problems mixing between 95 and 98 machines.
Well,
that the description.
I got ME downstairs, and then 90, both of the other ones are 98 SE.
Sometimes the description field in that network identity causes problems. If there's something in it, erase it. If there's not something in it, put something in it.
But can that one machine see either of the other machines?
Can't see any of the other machines, nope.
Then you definitely have a problem with the work group, it sounds
and
like.
Check, and make sure you've got NetBUI in there also.
Okay, I just did NetBUI.
Unless you're using TCP. And then you can try using a ping, which is a very low
But are
level.
The other machines using NetBUI by itself, or are they using NetBUI over TCP? You got to make them all the same.
Okay.
And we are out of time. I want to thank all the people who called in, and I want to apologize to all the people we did not get to. Call back earlier
Goes
next
back
week.
Fast.
We'll be back next week at 12:20 with Dave Enright, Steve Ray. Thanks to Rob Linton, who kept us on track, and all you folks who called in. Please vote in the polls. Please join the forums. We'll see you next week for the folks here. I'm Nick Francesco for Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Our last show of the year.